Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Lawrence Jacobs, who is the Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair of Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, where he also directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Political Affairs. And his latest book is Fed Tower, How Finance Wins, Who Governs, President, Public Opinion, and Manipulation. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Jacobs.
Good to be with you again.
Well, thank you for joining us, Lawrence. And with so much attention on the domestic race, groups like Indivisible and others out there, and of course the school teachers, I think, in some of these red states, we were just talking about that, are really showing the way, if you will, in terms of the hope for the Democrats to pick up the House, even the Senate. But nobody seems to be running on the foreign policy front. And is that because it's basically never been that important to the American people unless we're at war? It would seem to me that the disquiet about Donald Trump, he's about to possibly make a deal with Kim Jong-un, which, and since he doesn't care about anything in details, he just wants to look good. There's a great deal of concern that it'll be a very cosmetic deal, if that, or it may not happen, or maybe Kim himself might walk out on it. There's also concern with these hawks like Pompeo and Bolton now close to Trump, who has obviously shown hawkish tendencies, that if for example, Israel gets into war with Iran, which is apparently a looming possibility in Syria, we may get involved as well in something like that. And of course, that would be a short-term boost for Trump before things turn sour, as they did with the Iraq war. So why is it that this is not being such an issue in this midterm?
Well, I think part of it is certainly that Americans don't see the cost of this. We don't see body bags coming home. I think the other part of it is that while you have had a significant amount of press coverage, including your station, but the Washington Post, New York Times, and others who have really started to get away from their desks and do some serious reporting on the domestic side, and obviously the Mueller investigation, the New York U.S. prosecutors are all examples of that. But when it comes to what's happening abroad, there's almost a silence in the American media. Let me give you an example. Donald Trump has substantially escalated the use of airstrikes abroad. Now, airstrikes don't involve putting troops on the ground. And we just saw this last week when he sent in a barrage of missiles into Syria. And was there a vote in Congress? No. Was there, you know, much discussion in the public arena about whether this was a good idea? And was there an opportunity for the opposition to ask some hard questions, like what's the strategy here? No. And this is part of a pattern. The pattern is that presidents are unilaterally taking us into war, or they're simply deploying American military force, as in the case of Syria. A few months ago, several Americans were killed in Niger, in Africa, and Lindsey Graham confessed on national television that he didn't even know American troops were in Niger, let alone 1,000 American troops. And that's what's happened. Congress is no longer involved. War is being conducted, and few Americans know about it. The press is preoccupied elsewhere and doesn't want to put the resources into covering these stories abroad. And meanwhile, there are civilians, thousands of civilians in other countries, innocent civilians who are being killed.
So why do you think then, I mean, has it ever been a campaign issue? Because your piece that you've written, Trump Wields the Imperial Presidency, the Legacy of Bipartisan Support for Presidential Power, which was prepared for a conference, A Republic, If We Can Keep It, that took place earlier in this month at the New America Foundation in Washington, D.C., You basically say that Trump is capitalizing on the imperial presidency erected by presidents since World War II, and this is provoking dire fears that American democracy will die since our national security and foreign policy is in the hands of a unilateralist with an aberrant personality and a reckless governing style.
Yeah, I think that's the thrust of it. And I think oftentimes the opposition to Donald Trump is focused on his personality and his peculiar way of making decisions. But the truth is that the imperial presidency, which has been constructed over the last six decades, is something both parties have built. And to really start to rein in this unilateral tendency of presidents simply to take the country into war or to launch surveillance, you would need to really start to ask hard questions of both political parties, because it's both Democrats and Republicans who have built this, and frankly, I don't think they're willing to do it.
Well, but in the last election, Hillary Clinton tried to paint Trump as a dangerous leader and that he was not mentally suitable to have the nuclear launch codes, and that was a big part of her campaign. On the other hand, Trump ran as an isolationist and wanted to get out of all these wars and ran against the Republican orthodoxy, ran against the Bush family, ran against the neocons. Of course, now he's got a neocon at his right hand.
Exactly. But that's the point, right? Here you had Donald Trump running as an isolationist who criticized Hillary Clinton as being eager to take the country into war. Donald Trump gets into office and he's now been captured by this kind of war-making cabal that crosses both party lines. It's not a partisan issue, and it takes a little while to get your head around that because we think of so much as really being a partisan thing where there's, kind of this vast difference. On the president's use of national security powers, there's a consensus at the elite level.
Well, but this is why I wonder why it is that a case can't be made that how different this guy is from tradition. He talks, and his supporters on Fox News talk about this deep state conspiracy. But the truth of the matter is that the deep state is getting purged. There's only one adult left, as far as we can tell, General Mattis. And you've got this reckless guy with these horrible people, sycophants and hawks and hardliners surrounding him. And we know from the deliberations that led up to this latest strike that Mattis kept trying to tamper down Bolton and Trump. They wanted to bomb the hell out of Syria. And Mattis kept saying, you kill one Russian, it's all bets are off.
But Ian, let me give you a counterexample. Barack Obama came into office, and he continued and actually expanded President Bush's policy of using drones, not only in an active battlefield, Afghanistan, but he expanded their use into Pakistan, Yemen, and other countries in Africa. And if you look at that closely, what you see is that these drones were used the way to assassinate U.S. citizens who the national security apparatus wanted taken out. There was literally an assassination list. And people like Rand Paul and some Democrats were asking hard questions. Where in the Constitution does the president get to sit in judgment and decide alone about who lives and who dies?
Right, but I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that I don't think we've ever had a chief executive and a commander-in-chief and a president who is so sort of dangerously unstable, has an obsession with nuclear weapons, is entirely, ego-driven and all about his own image and takes things very personally. And if he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed, God help us.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that Donald Trump is unlike any modern president we've had. But it's also the case that the powers he's wielding were established and legitimized by the previous Democratic and Republican presidents. And this idea of an imperial presidency, which, myth has it, was kind of diffused back in the 1970s, is now roaring ahead. And so the power is in the hands of Trump, but the power was given to the president before he ever took office. And that's the part, I think, that's so important to understand, because what I hear is from those raising critical questions and raising them in protest, whether it's Indivisible or Resistance or other groups, is almost entirely about domestic issues. And meanwhile, we are seeing an increasing war making. And as you just said, I think it's likely to increase with this new group of advisors who are infamous for their interest in sending American military force abroad.
Well, I think just in closing, though, you also have to, I think, question the American people in a way. If the Iraq War didn't cure us of imperial presidency, I don't know what would. It's so obviously a catastrophe, and they do seem to like a little cosmetic war. You know, we just had one.
Yeah, but where's the reporting on that?
Yeah.
I mean, the reporting tends to be, you know, from an aircraft carrier showing a missile going off. What it doesn't show you often is the fact that you've got thousands and thousands of civilians on the ground, or the fact that the use of this kind of airstrikes is actually giving a cause for recruitment for more radical groups. It's really, and it's being done solely by the White House. What happened to Congress? What happened to the judiciary stepping in and saying there is a process in the Constitution that guides when we use military force? It's been completely sidelined.
Well, Lawrence Jacobs, I thank you for joining us. I thank you for bringing up these issues.
Good to be with you again.
And again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Jacobs, who is the Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair of Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, where he also directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Eben H. Humphrey School of Political Affairs. And his latest book is Fed Tower, How Finance Wins and Who Governs, Presidents, Public Opinion, and Manipulation. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll speak with Josh Koskoff, a Connecticut-based trial attorney who represented 10 Sandy Hook families in a groundbreaking case against the Remington Arms Company.